Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, or people of note making a difference or just making life in the royal city more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today I talked to Laura McClure. She's the chief steward of Local 1334 of the Canadian Union of Public Employees at the University of Guelph. They represent the trade workers and maintenance staff on campus. Presently, both the U of G and QB 1334 are locked in negotiations for a new contract, and they have their back up against a deadline mid-month when the workers can either strike or be locked out by management. One of the issues they're negotiating is one of the issues we're talking about today: precarious and contractual labor, and whether or not organized labor can do anything about it is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. So in the midst of some tense negotiations, QP is organizing a town hall this Wednesday, March the 1st, at the Italian-Canadian Club at 135 Ferguson Street here in Guelph. The topic is the rise of precarious contract and part-time labor in the economy of the 21st century. It's been said that 52% of the jobs in the Greater Toronto Area can be categorized as such, and certainly the monthly job numbers are representative of a job market where few of the jobs are long-term full-time positions. Is there anything that can be done, or is this just the way it is in the new economy and we're going to have to get used to it? Well, no one's going to get used to anything if QP and other labor activists have their way. And the reason why the Canadian Union for Public Employees is involved is because public employees are very much affected by the encroachment of precarious work. One of the things that the employees of 1334 are fighting for is to keep jobs on campus as employees of the University of Guelph, whereas the university has been slowly but surely contracting things out, like janitorial services, to outside vendors. Basically, they're outsourcing employment to temp agencies and the like, saving the money in the short term by not having to pay union salaries or offer union-negotiated benefits. Of course, this is a nationwide thing, and it affects no single sector of the economy alone. Hospitals, libraries, and city halls across Canada are subject to contracting out of services, along with universities and the private sector. So on this week's Guelph Politicast, I talked to Laura McClure about the labor point of view on the issues, countering the usual arguments in favor of this new economy and whether or not organized labor can turn it all around. Just a quick disclosure before we begin: my open sources Guelph partner Scotty Hertz is a member of QP 1334. He's an electrician at the University of Guelph, but he had no part in organizing this podcast or organizing the event it promotes within. So having said that, we can proceed. I caught up with Laura McClure earlier this week. So Laura McClure, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Thanks for asking.
You're very welcome. And before we get into definitions and things and solutions, the timing of this seems not terribly coincidental, having a town hall about precarious labor and contract labor, because you're part of QP 1334, which is, that's of course a major sticking point in your negotiations here at the University of Guelph, that you're deeply concerned about contracting out the janitorial staff and the trades guys, electricians and all that. So is this a coincidence? I mean, or is this something you've always wanted to be getting up and talking about?
This is something that we've been looking at in QP, specifically in the university sector, because it's not just the support workers. Like, you're correct in saying that we're concerned about it because we're facing contracting out as QP Local 1334 with our trades and our custodial staff. But also academic workers have been experiencing increased precarity as the years go on with contract faculty, TAs and GAs. They don't have the security that they need to participate fully in the community as well. So it's not just kind of focused on us. It's been a focus on the province. I sit on the OUWCC, which is the Ontario University Workers Coordinating Committee, and this is something that's been discussed for years now. It just seems like there's an increase in the last little while. It looks as if there's a provincial strategy with employers to this trend towards precarity, to allow them flexibility, and drive wages down and not be accountable to the people that they hire.
how would you define precarious work? Because you said a lot of things I want to get into deeper, but I want to sort of set the stage for people too. And so in terms of what would a precarious job be?
One that has no security, in my mind. So we see academic workers who have to apply every 3 months to teach a course. We also have custodians who are on three-month contracts that can be not renewed at any time. So from month to month, you're not sure that you're going to have a job. And you don't have access to the benefits that a regular full-time worker would as well. So it's precarious in the fact that you never know from month to month if that's where you're going to be, and you don't have access and can't plan for the future.
Right. The tricky part, too, is that a lot of these jobs are sort of precarious or contract to name only, because you keep going from contract to contract. Some people, so that they're technically hired full time, but I guess it's a loophole is how you would frame it.
Absolutely,
they're just going from contract to contract
to contract. And if we look at our bargaining unit specifically in the custodial staff, we have contract workers, temp workers, who have been on night shift now for almost 7 years. So they're still on a contract, and that can be not renewed at any point in time. So 7 years is an awfully long time to have an extension from your job every 3 months. We also have temp workers now who have been here long enough that they're in positions of authority, lead hands, for instance. So the university pays them the wage, but their access to pension or benefits is really limited because they're a temp contract worker.
And the university will use that as a point in the negotiations, that the pensions in particular are eating the bottom line, because there are so many people who are drawing pensions for longer and living longer. And that's to say nothing of the fact that, those people did earn their benefits, but just as a pure matter of numbers, that's their main point, is that we can't give everyone a pension because.
Like conversely too, that for those of us who will draw a pension, the pension is supported by the younger people coming up.
Right.
So the workers that contribute once we're gone are the ones that maintain the pension program. So by having temp contract workers and should they contract out the work, they're looking at wages that would be around, well, what we've seen across the sector is around $13 an hour. So that's not going to sustain the pension going forward. You need people to participate in the pension plan to make contributions so that it's sustainable for the ones as they retire. So if the university is really concerned about the pension plan, you would think that they would take steps to ensure its sustainability going forward, and hiring low-wage workers with no benefits and no ability to contribute to the pension plan does not support the pension plan that they seem to be concerned about.
It sounds like self-sabotage.
Yes, that's exactly what it sounds like to me.
Right. But it makes you wonder, are they so focused on the immediate bottom line that, we're trying to make the budget up for the year, and we have such and such amount of money to pay set amount of people to keep the buildings clean or to keep the upkeep of the various residences or what have you, then they're not looking at the longer game of what happens in 20 years when we have everybody contracted out, nobody's paying into a pension plan, and then we have all these employees now who are going to be retiring, and there's going to be an empty kitty for them to draw from.
Can you repeat that? Sorry, Adam.
So I was a bit circular, but yeah. I think the point is that they're looking at the short game.
The short game and not the long-term
game.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It almost seems like cheating in a way to me, because you're talking about the people who've been on contract for 7 years. Mm-hmm. Because I remember my early days working in a Zeller store. And of course, there are people there who you wonder to yourself, how do these people stay employed? Because there was one woman in particular who has moved around from department to department to department because she, was not, not the greatest worker. And it was explained to me that it's actually cheaper to keep someone on, even if they're not the greatest, than to fire someone and then hire someone who could be great. And that's where the cheating, I think, comes in, because you think about that. Well, what's the financial benefit? Taking that math, what's the financial benefit of keeping someone having a position that's all contract? But here we are. That's how they're getting around it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. They are cheating. They are essentially cheating. They are absolutely cheating. And to me, from my perspective, I don't think that this is even about money mm-hmm. in many respects. The changes that they've proposed would ultimately lead to a savings of $150,000. Mm-hmm. We make up less than, what, 2%? 2% of the overall budget. So to even eradicate our bargaining unit would not make any significant changes to the bottom line right. at all. So in my mind, this isn't about money. It's about union busting and then moving forward with low-wage, precarious jobs.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That does seem to be the trend, though. Mm-hmm. I think just about every level sort of looks at where the pennies are mm-hmm. and not where the $10 bills are, the $20 bills.
Exactly. Because if you put it in context, $150,000 would be a coffee service
right.
for the university.
Right.
So in my mind, that's not a significant savings. There seems to be funding that's going, I believe it's 40% of university funding is going to the upper echelon, the ones that are on the sunshine list. That's where the money is going. Mm-hmm. And as you know, post-secondary has been chronically underfunded. So mm-hmm. it's important to really use the money wisely. And I don't see how increase in admin positions and positions over six figures is anywhere way kind of responsible. It doesn't encompass a holistic community vision long term right. for the university.
Well, I'm going to play some devil's advocate with you because...
Oh, I hate that.
That's the name of the game. But, I mean, these are the points people are mm-hmm. coming at you with. There was an op-ed on the Financial Post that said that contract work is attractive to a lot of people, particularly the millennials, because there is that flexibility that we're talking about. And he called it a feature, not a bug. Why is that guy wrong?
Because I don't think that... short-term contract work is attractive. I'm not 100% sure that you can say that as a fact. I would have, because the people that I'm in contact with are looking for job security.
Right.
The people who are coming up behind me, because I'm, you know, seasoned, won't have access to long-term jobs that will maintain them, sustain them in order to start a family, buy a house, all of that. I think that that's misleading to say that millennials find that attractive mm-hmm. because based on the people that I talk to, they don't. And it's stressful to live in that kind of insecurity. I think that we have an obligation to make sure that there are good paying jobs that have job security moving forward. And I think we do a real disservice to the millennials coming up by not having that available to them.
Well, that's a good segue into this next one, which was the United Way in 2015 said that precarious work is here to stay.
Not if we can do anything about it. I don't think that that's true at all. I think that we need, there's employment workplace review happening right now. They're taking a look at the Employment Standards Act and the Labor Relations Act. So at this point, those two acts are open, and there's been submissions made by unions across the province, workers across the province, and employers across the province. So because that's open now, there's going to be recommendations and hopefully some changes coming forward. So this is an opportunity now for us to address that specifically. It may not be here to stay at all. I don't think that that's... a true statement. I think that there's an opportunity here for us, and if we organize and we get the government to listen to us in this open period, we can make some really positive changes to the Employment Standards Act and the Labor Relations Act. People deserve paid sick days, for instance.
Right.
When union density is high, working conditions for everybody improves. So to make it easier for folks to join a union, that's also outlined in the recommendations that we submitted anyways. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that it's, you can say with any sort of certainty that precarious work is here to stay, nor should people accept that.
Right. In that, though, you're kind of asking people to gamble, I think, because I think a lot of people, and I make this point whenever I talk about labor relations, is there is, I think there is a need for unions. Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree that the middle class was healthier, more vibrant when mm-hmm. there was a large unionized private workforce. That's not politics talking, that's just numbers. Mm-hmm. But we've seen that I think there's a tremendous difficulty in sort of getting people to put aside the I got to keep my job. I got to hold on to what's mine. And I don't want to put all my chips on Red 23 to get the union and to get the benefits and get the sick days, because the company can just, you know, well, if this is how it's going to be, we'll pull up stakes and we'll go to Mexico or we'll go to somewhere where people
that flexibility.
Are gonna
fight. Yeah. Well, I can recognize that would be a risk, but I also have to say that the benefits would outweigh the risk in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I had an opportunity to speak with Liz Sandals at one time, and in Guelph alone.
Just once.
Yeah, really. That's all it took. No, but in Guelph alone, 40% of workers in Guelph make less than $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
And she recognized at that time that the gap between the haves and the have-nots is expanding, and it's an issue. And for me to hear Liz Sandals say that of all people, I think that you can pretty much guarantee that it's pretty bad. So if we don't do anything at this point, things are going to deteriorate to the point where people won't be able to live anyways.
Mm-hmm.
We have now working homeless, where people
right.
are working full-time hours and still are not able to pay for housing. That's wrong. And I think that we need to organize together and mobilize so that we do have an increase in union membership and people have access to good paying jobs.
It's part of the, I think, the problem with a lot of issues is that it's not... Here's the problem. Here's the mm-hmm. some solutions. Here's the goal. It's this big tangled ball of thread that you have
right.
to pull at one time. And to go back, what you're saying about reopening some of these acts, you know, I think the definitions are so important and the roles, because I know one of the big campaigns is living wage,
mm-hmm.
$15 minimum wage,
mm-hmm.
and the argument always is against that. Well, this is like, you know, Mick jobs and McDonald's and stocking shelves at Walmart. This is, I mean, that sort of made sense back in the day when you had, you know, after school jobs
mm-hmm.
and moms who were, you know, working a couple hours a week to supplement the home income while dad was the breadwinner or what have you. Now these are people's careers.
That's right.
And it seems like a cognitive disconnect that we have to leap over before we can even start to unravel the ball of thread.
Well, I'm not really sure. Because where my mind went to was that we do have people who are working those jobs. Those are full-time jobs now that they need to participate in so that they can support themselves and their families. We see a lot of older women accessing those jobs as well.
Right. Retired people.
Exactly. Because it's difficult to retire now.
Yeah.
Because you just don't have the ability, one, to save your money so that you can retire with dignity, and two, CPP right now as it stands, even though it's been expanded and that comes down the line, you're just not able to support yourself. So $15 an hour, while not perfect, is a step in the right direction. And those Mick jobs and the jobs at Walmart, they're the biggest users of the minimum wage. So
right.
whenever the discussion comes to, oh, well, small business will really take a hit, it's those big corporations who are abusing the minimum wage in many respects,
mm-hmm.
right?
And of course, big corporations have big influence.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost feel like, you know, the old turn of phrase was you can't fight City Hall, but it seems like you can fight City Hall now, but you can't, what you can't fight is the big corporations.
But I don't think that that's absolutely true either. I think if you look at the states, this $15 in fairness campaign mm-hmm. is worldwide. And
right.
there have been some real gains made in some states passing legislature that guarantees a $15 an hour minimum wage. So I think if it's possible in those states, then it's possible for us as well. Yeah.
What do you think the biggest obstacles to not just the 15 in fairness, but in terms of, you know, getting people reoriented to the idea of not having so many contracts? Because I think there's probably a place for contract workers, but what I think we're talking about is not having a society full of contract workers where every 3 months for 20 years
in perpetuity. Yeah.
So you know mm-hmm. you have to renew your contract. You know, I'm not going to mm-hmm. do the math immediately. I guess 600 times.
Mm-hmm.
throughout your life.
Exactly. Exactly. And especially on campuses.
Yeah.
I think that the university has an obligation to be a good employer. They say that they rank number 6 in the country as a good employer, then they should be a good employer. We shouldn't have people on this campus who make less than $15 an hour. We shouldn't have contracted out work at all. They're coming in not only for custodial, but trades, academic workers. They have an obligation to be, like, put your money where your mouth is. You keep telling people you're this great employer, then be a good employer for everyone.
Mm-hmm. I do wonder, and I don't know, I'm just sort of spitballing here, what the various indicators are, because just, you know, from being around the campus, it does always seem like there is this push-pull, and maybe it's just the nature of the beast, you know, between the workers and the management. But this is not a new thing, and in an article I posted to Guelph Politico about the teachers' assistants and the sessionals, I actually have a video of you last year at the Day of Action talking about this very issue and how the university needed to address it. And here we are a year later, and I don't think it's been addressed at all, at least not from the management side. It's you go to the labor page on the university website, it's like, well, we're negotiating in good faith, we hope to have a resolution soon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's almost a year since 1334 has had a contract or has been working under contract.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
I don't see that that conversation is going to stop anytime soon. I think it's important that we keep raising it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that we continue to talk about it, because there is an opportunity for the funding to be allocated differently. I know in year 2000, there was one president, 2 vice presidents. Mm. We now have 1 president, 11 vice presidents, and each one of those has an associate vice president. Mm. So there are pockets on campus that seem to be growing and diverting funds away from what's perceived as kind of menial jobs or you know, like even our food service workers on campus, they deserve to be treated better than they are. So I think that there's an opportunity to continue with that conversation. And as QP, we keep putting forward viable solutions. We've been able to make a presentation a couple of times to the Finance Committee at the Board of Governors. So QP is working on the solutions. We're not just talking about, please give us. We're talking, okay, so this is how this works. So here's a solution that we can see, even in terms of the pension problem going forward.
And what's the response to that usually?
Well, we don't see the solutions as yet, but we're hopeful. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk a bit about the town hall on Wednesday.
Okay, perfect.
In terms of the format, who's coming.
So it's a precarious work in the university sector town hall, and it's March the 1st, which is Wednesday, from 7 till 9. We have Louise Birdsell Bauer, who's coming to speak. She's doing a PhD in precarious work. We have Graham Cox, who is the QP researcher. He will do a presentation. I will be presenting as well. Janice Folk Dawson will be our moderator. So there'll be presentations, and then there's an opportunity afterwards for questions and answers so that we can have a discussion and figure out a strategy moving forward to push back against this increased reliance on precarious work.
What kind of strategies are you looking at?
Well, we tend to go to where's the funding, what's coming in, what's going back, have a conversation with people about what's working, what's not working, different perspectives from where they sit, incorporating all of that and having that discussion to figure out, to tease out the threads and see where we can be effective moving forward.
What's the onus of the province on this, do you think? Because the university is of course funded by Government of Ontario, so as the next level up, certainly share bit of responsibility.
Yes, and there seems to be a provincial strategy as well, because this precarity isn't just happening on this campus. And I can speak specifically about custodial staff. We saw a 2-tiered agreement come in at Queen's. We've seen the debacle that was Laurier in the summertime. So it's not just unique to Guelph. It's across the province, and it's a provincial strategy. And it would appear to me that the province is using this pension issue to force folks into to situations they may not want to be. So simply this wind-up solvency problem, while it still exists here in Ontario, has been wiped out in other provinces with the stroke of a pen. So it's not something that's insurmountable or that has to absolutely be there, because other provinces have given permanent solvency relief to different universities. So that pressure is coming from the province to kind of push into a mandate that they have, right?
Is this getting a lot of, you know, I guess, is it having any resonance at the provincial level? Because it seems like the issue at the provincial level right now is electricity, and that's all anyone can see. And I mean, that's not to mitigate that. It's certainly an important issue.
Oh, absolutely.
But there certainly seems to be a number of pressures on the Liberal government, especially going into an election year. So do you think this is going to have an effect at all? Because the Labor caucus, shall we say, is certainly one that the Liberals have come to depend on.
Well, I think so, absolutely. And I think that as a committee, or the University Workers Committee, it's our goal to put post-secondary education as an election issue, to pressure the government to make the changes that we see need to be made, not just for workers, but for students as well. We influence the student experience. We're on campus. So that's what we're looking at. Yeah.
If anyone wants to get involved, I mean, not just in the town hall, but I mean, in general, and working on the issue of precarious labor, you know, perhaps there are people listening to this who have who are working under contract and working under precarious conditions, are wondering, how can I help to break free of all this? What?
Well, to participate, reach out to folks that you know that are working in on this issue. So call CUPE, call our office. We have we have a huge honor that, for lack of a better word, Janice Folk Dawson, who is the president of CUPE Local 1334, is our chair for the Ontario University Workers Coordinating Committee. So she is involved across the province on different campuses in different capacities. So if it's university specific, or even if it's community wide, because we also have roots in the community, to contact myself or Janice. We're always happy to talk to somebody, especially if it's about trying to figure out what we're going to do to push back against precarious work.
I realize you're not going to say anything specific, but are you feeling hopeful about the negotiations?
Well, you know, everybody comes to the table with their own idea of how this should look. I am hopeful that we can reach a fair deal. Our membership has told us quite clearly what their priorities are. So that's what we're going in to bargain. Let's just keep our fingers crossed. I know that we're prepared to take as long as it takes and work as hard as we possibly can to get a deal. Unfortunately, it's not always all up to me. The university obviously has some input into that. So we'll see where they're at. Yeah.
So just for everybody's information, again, the town hall is Wednesday, March the 1st at 7 p.m., and that's at the Italian-Canadian Club.
Yes, and there will be snacks.
Well,
there you go.
That just sealed the deal.
I know.
Well, Laura McClure, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Adam.
And once again, that was Laura McClure, Chief Steward of CUPE Local 1334 at the University of Guelph. You can find out more information about the town hall on Facebook, and stay tuned for more developments concerning the potential lockout or strike of CUPE Local 1334 in the next couple of weeks. But that's it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast, although I should add, there will be another edition later this week. Stay tuned. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics, and Sid Dale, the host for the Guelph Politicast, is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. Check out the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you can, please donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/Guelph Politico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating.
And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we'll have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly, more shortly than you might think. But until then, see you next time.